Jason here with a confession to make. I'm 47 years old, and for the last 16 years, I've been putting out the fretboard journal, which means I proofread pages every single day, and I stare at the computer screen for about 10 hours every day. My eyesight was starting to really suck. Like a lot of folks, I went to the local drugstore, it rhymes with Walgreens, and I bought the cheapest reading glasses I could find just to make it through the day. They sucked, they hurt my nose, I hated them, and they were pretty much disposable because every time I took them somewhere, they would bend, and then I'd throw them away and get another pair. Then I just discovered Caddis. Caddis makes readers that don't suck for people who own their age or people like me who are in denial about their age. They make reading glasses that have blue blocking technology so you can actually stare at a computer screen for longer than you wanted to stare at a computer screen. It blocks 45% of the harmful blue light of your computer and screen monitors. Best of all, they give 1% of their gross revenue to music education programs, and they look cool. These are real glasses, folks, that actually look great. You can go to caddislife.com to see their entire line of eyewear. I know this is a weird sponsor for the Fretboard Journal, but you know what? The founder and CEO of this company is a Fretboard Journal reader who plays guitar, bluegrass guitar. He is in our community. So I want you to go check out what they are up to. And best of all, if you use the discount code FRETBOARD15OFF, you will save $15 off of your order as long as it's got a minimum purchase of $95. I am rocking the Miklos reading glasses in a couple different strengths, and I love them. So I think you will too. Go to caddislife.com, and again, the discount code is FRETBOARD15OFF. I'll include a link in the show notes. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde, and as always, that's John Rauhouse playing in the background. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today is actually my birthday, and I don't need any cards from any of you. I'll take guitars, but I don't need any cards or gifts from any of you. But I do have a birthday wish, which is I hope we get as many subscribers to the Fretboard Journal as humanly possible, including some of you out there who have been enjoying these shows but have yet to subscribe. So here's my gift to you all for my birthday. If you go to fretboardjournal.com and use the discount code birthday, you will save a big chunk of change off of any new Fretboard Journal subscription. You can get the digital edition, the instantaneous gratification edition where the PDF shows up in your inbox within about a minute, or you can get the keepsake print edition that everybody loves to put on their coffee table. And there is an add-on button where if you want to get the newest edition, the one with James Taylor on the cover that everybody's talking about right now, you can add that to your order too. So again, birthday is the discount code. Fretboardjournal.com is the URL. Go over there, see what we're offering. That is the thing that powers all of these podcasts we're doing. We're doing like 7 podcasts now. And all the fun stuff that we put online. It's the magazine. So please support us. We're a reader-supported magazine. Advertising is not a big part of the print edition of the Fretboard Journal. So we could use your support. So, podcast. Today, we have, coming back to the show for the, he's been on the show 4 or 5 times. I think he and TJ Thompson are probably tied for most Fretboard Journal podcast appearances. We have Andy Powers of Taylor Guitars, and every year or two when I talk to Andy, Taylor undoubtedly has some new amazing guitar that they have unleashed upon the world. Today we are ostensibly talking about Taylor's new Grand Theater offerings. There's a GT811E. There's also a Koa version of the Grand Theater, the GT guitar. I've tried both those guitars out. I loved them both. I mean, everything Taylor makes is so playable and cool. And these are just refinements, as you will hear, on what Taylor's already been doing, but they're very cool and interesting refinements. Taylor also has a new bracing system, C-Class. I just got wrapped my head around V-Class. Now we've got C-Class. So I asked Andy about that. I asked him about how Taylor's doing during the pandemic and a lot more. We cover, every time I talk to Andy, we talk about Land Cruisers and tractors and family life and all sorts of stuff. So you're getting the full meal deal here, folks. I hope you enjoy it. We also, I'm feeling generous this week. We have another episode of the Fretboard Journal podcast coming out later this week, which is an interesting one. Steve Kolb was a guitar maker in the early 70s. He only made a few dozen guitars, but they ended up with David Crosby and Leo Kottke and Robbie Robertson and Jerry Garcia. And I reached out to him. We've been emailing back and forth. He was a cohort of Mark Whitebook, who also was on this podcast. And I wanted to get his life story because honestly, aside from the footnote of him making those guitars, I didn't really know much about him. He's just kind of mentioned as, you know, one of those early 70s luthiers. So I got his whole story. That's going to be coming out in just a couple of days. So if you're not a Fretboard Journal podcast subscriber, please join us. Just click on the subscribe button, or if you're on Spotify, click on the follow button. We do have a few sponsors, of course. Mono Cases, you can go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of gig bags and studio monitor stands and pedal boards and pedal board bags. We also are again sponsored by our friends over at Folkway Music, who have a whole bunch of Taylors in stock right now. And also, God, so many cool guitars, some vintage Gibsons. Mark Stutman, the owner of Folkway, is sort of the vintage acoustic Gibson expert of the world. And, coolest of all, kind of, there's this guy named Jackson Cunningham. We've actually covered him on fretboardjournal.com, who makes these exacting reproductions of Gibson L5s and Gibson L00s. He's got one of the L00s in stock, a 1933 recreation. So check that out over at folkwaymusic.com. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. We also are sponsored, of course, by Retrofret Vintage Guitars over in New York City. And every week that I'm on this show, I talk about some cool new offering that they have. Right now, they have a 1939 Gibson EH150 lap steel. They also have the full-scale Guild M65 thin line hollow body from 1966, the single pickup. Such a cool guitar and a lot more. Just go to retrofret.com. I don't do them justice when I do these little spiels because they get like 10 great guitars every day. What else can I add? Fretboard Journal 48, we are hard at work on. That's going to be coming out in May. In between now and then, we have so many cool podcasts and video offerings we're going to be sharing with you. So head on over to fretboardjournal.com, see what we're all about. If anybody wants to really gift me a great birthday present, check out my other podcast, Sweep the Floor. It's a new podcast I'm doing where I just interview cool people who build stuff that may or may not have anything to do with music. It's a lot of fun. It's wherever you'll find your podcast. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Andy Powers. And again, Taylor's got a whole bunch of new stuff to share, as always, including the Grand Theater, the GT811E, and I think the K21E, the Koa one. But more than anything, enjoy hearing Andy Powers, one of our favorite people, back on the podcast, as always. Keep the feedback coming, and thank you for tuning in. So, Andy, we talk every, I don't know, at least a couple times a year. Usually we see each other at NAMM. That hasn't happened in a while. A lot's taken place since I think the last time we talked. You became an owner of Taylor, and then shortly thereafter, every employee of Taylor sort of became an owner. A month ago, I got these new Grand Theater models. So we have a lot we could cover, but let's just focus on the GT for right now, the Grand Theater guitars. Like, walk us through, I know you've said this probably umpteen times to every magazine under the sun, but what was the evolution of that guitar and how did that thing come to be?
They're pretty simple guitars actually, because we've built a lot of cool guitars that are very, they're like highbrow guitars. You know, they're very serious, like, boy, this, we want it to sound, you know, ring every last good drop out of that design. And those are fun guitars, but the flip side is sometimes you build a guitar just because you want to have fun with it. You know, it's like a guitar that you go, it's fun and games, so to speak. And so we build a lot of GS Minis. And now that was sort of a evolution of the baby Taylor, the big baby Taylor. How do you make it one step better? How do you make it go to 11 kind of a thing? Mm-hmm. And so we build these GS Minis that we love. It's still a very small travel guitar. It's built on a Grand Symphony size. It's been shrunk down. And I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, something like that, I started playing with those to see, well, could you make it cooler? could you, I mean, that's a layered wood back and side guitar. So it's not an all solid wood guitar in that respect. So I did a few that went like way over the line, like French polished finish, high glue construction, like all the traditional guitar making tricks you can throw at it. And at the end of the day, I'd sit around, I'd play and go, well, that's fun, but it's a GS Mini. And there are some things that are great about that and some inherent limitations. One of them is that it's just a little too small. It's very small. It's a travel size guitar, really. And so I have a lot of musician friends who want to be playing something like that. They're comfortable on a guitar that size. And you'll play on stage. You go, yeah, it's good. But what you need is for it to be like that much bigger than it is. And then you pick up a more conventional long scale guitar and you play that and you go, yeah, sometimes that's just a little too big. It's like that much too big.
Yeah.
Oh, and I wanted something in between the two. So, well, if I want it to sound a little bigger, let's make it a little bigger. And if I want it to feel a little smaller than one of these guitars, make it a little smaller than that. And so largely the flat top guitar world is divided into travel guitars and then conventional long scale guitars. And there's this spot in the middle where there are not many options. And so I thought, okay, well, it'd be fun to build a guitar in that little spot and think of it in terms of like the way a piano designer would think about it. Okay, so the reason I say that, say if you were going to design a piano, you don't really design it by how large the box is or how physically long it is. You design it by the length of the strings, and then you make a box that fits those strings, right? And so you have like a baby grand piano and it's based on string length and you build this box to fit, or you have this big concert grand piano, you build these really long bass strings and then you build this big old long box to fit. But you decide how long the strings should be and then you build everything else according to that. Typically the way guitar makers work is we'll decide, well, how wide does the lower bout of a guitar need to be, or how long does it need to be? Mm-hmm. And then design around those criteria. So this one, I went different. I designed the scale length first and then built the rest of the guitar around it. So I took a 25 and a half inch scale. So pretty typical, like a Fender sort of scale length. It's the same scale length as our typical, like a long scale guitar. And you know, I really like the way this feels when I drop tune. So if I tune it E flat to E flat, it feels all slinky and the tension's real low. It's real nice like that. A lot of electric players do that. And then if you put a capo at the first fret, you're back up at concert pitch, right? But I'll build a guitar based on that idea. So I took a 25 and a half inch scale, essentially chopped a fret off, mm-hmm. and built the guitar around that. So it ends up as standard concert pitch, but with this 24 and approximately an eighth inch scale that has a very slinky, loose kind of hand feel, real low tension, really easy to get around on, and puts it real conveniently in this spot between a long scale guitar and a travel guitar.
Did you, I like to think of you, you probably don't think of yourself this way. I like to think of you as kind of a mad scientist over there in your two laboratories, one at Taylor and one at your house. Did you play around with different body shapes around that scale? Were there wild experiments?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not what you would describe as a mad scientist, because I'm just not that angry of a person. You know,
I mean, you're a happy scientist.
Yeah. You know, it's,
you're grounded.
You know, these are guitars. It is fun and games, right? But I took that scale length and then started drawing some different curves and realized I had drawn something almost identical to a shrunk down grand orchestra set of curves. So then I thought, okay, well, let me try that one. Take a grand orchestra, which is our largest body style, and shrink it. Didn't shrink perfectly even in every direction. Got manipulated a little bit. But it's basically a grand orchestra guitar at a slightly reduced size that fits with this, like a very modern set of proportions. Mm-hmm. So it ends up with nearly the perfect aspect ratio of width, the length, where the bridge falls on the body, with this scale length, this tension, all those kind of details sort of just fit perfectly together. So if you study the proportions of it, it's just right.
But just for grins, did you throw it on like a jumbo, like a big body, or no?
Yeah, it's not enough. Basically, strings have a certain amount of inertia that's tied to the tension that you can apply to it. And if you have a structure that's super large, inherently, it requires more inertia to get the thing moving. And so in dealing with a slightly lower tension set of strings, because of the shorter scale length, mm-hmm. I needed something that would respond quickly and easily enough.
Got it.
To be set in motion that way. So a little smaller is the right set of proportions.
And you're an analytical guy, and you said not quite 24 1/8 inch scale. So is this just pure math? Like you just did the division or whatever? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's actually a little shorter than that, but it's such an ugly, uncomfortable number.
Okay. So it's not in millimeters perfectly rounded or in inches.
Nah, it's weird.
It's like pi.
It's like, okay, you work the formula out and then turn it into a number and you go, oh, the guys are going to kill me over this one. Cause this is, you know, we like to think in even inches or even increments or even metric system.
Yeah.
And this is not. And so we approximate it. It's about the same. When you take the string compensation into account, it ends up about 24 1/8.
Okay.
So it's as close as we need to know.
Yeah. I got to try out these guitars, a couple of them. And, you know, the thing that's astounding about Taylors is whether you're a traditionalist or into modern guitars or wherever you are in the spectrum, nobody will ever say a Taylor is uncomfortable to play. And these are somehow more comfortable to play than even the standard Taylors that of the past. One thing I noticed on the little tag there is it's like we just educated people on what V-class bracing was all about. Now we're down to, now we're at C. What is the difference there between those two?
Okay, yeah, I figured you'd ask. When I first built this guitar, I was working around the set of proportions, and frankly, it wasn't great. It was fun, it was intriguing, but it didn't sound amazing, because when I started it, I was working with a V-class type of arc, or like a traditional X-brace sort of architecture. We hadn't come out with the V. I hadn't thought of that yet. So this was back in 2013 that I started playing with this set of dimensions around a guitar. And with a small body, especially one that's short like this, the limitations that I ran into with an X-brace architecture were very apparent, because, you know, it's hard to build a big fire in a small fireplace. It's hard to make the thing move the way you want it to move. And so we started working with the V-class idea. That was really good. That propelled it even further, because we have some things to work with there. We have better sustain, you've got better volume, the intonation aspect, the pitch accuracy got real good. But even still, on a body that's a little shorter like this and relatively small, there's an inherent limitation in the low end response. So it feels like by the time you get low on the guitar, it just starts to fall away and it's not as balanced as you would want. So what I ended up doing was building a very asymmetrical bracing architecture that helps exaggerate this weak spot to bring it back up to where, yeah, the whole thing works pretty good. It's pretty well balanced, pretty even. You get a lot of the benefits that we've kind of associate with the V-class idea. You get this real long sustain, get a nice linear character over all the notes, real good volume. The pitch accuracy of the notes is very good. But it helps make up for this inherent weak spot. So if you were to disassemble the guitar and look at the inside, you'll see there's family resemblance to a V-class, but one side of it is sort of missing and replaced with a different kind of arrangement of the parts.
Hmm.
So it's the easy way to say it is it's an asymmetrical architecture to create a deliberately asymmetrical voicing.
Yeah. I can wrap my head around that. I mean, as a armchair luthier, my instinct, and I'm guessing maybe some people who are listening to this, would be like, as the body gets smaller, the braces should get thinner and smaller.
Yeah.
But you're fair. Actually saying that maybe just moving the braces kind of will add some bass response. Like you can play with the, like an EQ, you can play with that just by moving the bracing around.
Oh, radically. So yeah, you're right. If the thing is smaller, you inherently make it, it becomes a stronger thing. It's mm-hmm. not going to flex in as much. Think of the rafters in the roof of that building. If you've got walls that are 10 feet apart, a 2x4 would span that without sagging too much. But if you move those walls 20 feet apart, boy, you need some big, tall ones to get the stiffness you need to keep them from sagging in, right?
Sure.
And so that's pretty simple. That's basic physics. And so you're right that you could make braces smaller. You could make them narrower without radically affecting their stiffness. It's really the height is what matters. But with any instrument, where you put things matters a whole lot, because that will determine largely where you have, it'll determine a lot of the pattern of how a top or a back moves in response to the energy that's being put at it.
Got it. And you guys, obviously now, I mean, there's a whole array of wood choices here. Does that bracing change depending on if it's urban ash or koa or what the top is?
Yeah, it's right now they're fairly subtle changes because the design is very wood reflective. And with these woods, the flavors that they turned into were so unique. They became so radically different from each other that I went, hey, this is really good. Just let's build that because they're mm-hmm. super fun to play. Like this one's an Alcoa version. And honestly, I think it's one of my favorite Alcoa guitars.
Yeah.
A lot of folks, you know, you get that kind of compression effect on the front side of the note. It's like if you imagine the envelope of a note, you have this huge initial peak on the attack. Tapers off, decays before it sustains and releases. Hardwood top like mahogany or koa will always trim that front part of the note off before it dies. So it makes it real smooth. And in this case, it feels so responsive despite that initial bit of compression. It ends up feeling like almost like it has an electric guitar like response. It's great.
Wow.
The rosewood one is the classic hi-fi spruce rosewood combo. It's like that ultra high fidelity classic pairing. It's like one of your staple flat top guitar wood pairings.
Yeah.
And then you have the urban ash version that's almost flamenco guitar like. It's got this ultra fast, ultra high dynamic range, a huge spike on the initial note. So they become different things.
Now that you've been doing this with this urban ash thing long enough, I don't know. These are trees that came from parks and freeways and where, you know, like scattered around. Is the wood pretty consistent or is it more varied than say a stash of koa that you get from Hawaii?
Well, I would say that the wood that we get is consistent because not every tree is a guitar tree. And so what happens in the urban wood environment is they'll bring down all the trees, all these logs, and bring them into one place. And we'll go through and look at them. And they're not all guitar quality. Some of them are like, nope, build a table out of that one, build furniture out of that one, build other things out of it. This one's a good guitar tree. Okay, so that we want that one. This one's a good guitar tree. And so by the time that we go and select at a log level, the wood is very consistent. Okay. It's actually, considering the whole range of trees, it's been more consistent than I would have expected.
Got it.
Because initially I had thought, these are small trees. They're kind of weak and anemic growing up in an urban environment. They're going to be little shrub things. And I couldn't be further from the truth. Some of these are big old giant prime logs that we've been getting some really great consistent material out of.
Yeah. And you guys have partnered with a company not far from you, relatively speaking. It's like in Riverside, and you guys are down outside of San Diego. Are there, I'm sure you guys have thought about this as you focus on sustainability in the future, are there other pockets of, you know, municipal trees in the United States that might lend themselves to guitar building projects?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really what we're doing here. We start local because it's the way anything really starts. Sure. But the hope is that the idea could spread into other makers, other places, other trees, other species, other cities, other countries, because all around the world, every city is filled with trees. There are trees planted everywhere. I mean, if you want to be in India, you look at an East Indian rosewood tree and you realize, well, that's a urban tree there. Those are mostly plantation grown on tea plantations. Well, that's just your common tree. If you're in Africa, there's ebony trees. If you're, you know, there's all kinds of things all over the place.
Yeah.
Here in the domestic U.S., you might be maybe you're in the East Coast and you have cherry, you've got some walnut across the Midwest, you've got maples, you've got birch, you've got all kinds of things that could be potentially cool guitar woods that are growing in cities all over the place. We started with these because we're in Southern California.
Sure. Makes perfect sense. This guitar, the GT, is obviously kind of a refinement, you've melded a couple guitars that already existed. Are you also behind the scenes working on some big, wild, crazy things that aren't, they're not just an evolution, but like jumping ahead in the line?
Oh yeah. There's always things that are going on. I mean, some of these projects go quickly. Some of them go slowly. This GT guitar, I started working on it back in 2013 and we got to launch it this year.
What took so long?
Well, for one, I was starting with an X-Brace guitar to begin with, and that didn't work great. So I wasn't thrilled with it then. And we had other things that we wanted to do. And so its time got to arrive eventually, but every one of these projects, if they're radically different, they take a long time. If they're a little bit different, yeah, some of those can go a little sooner, but there are only so many hours in a day to do all the things that you really want to do. So some of these ideas take a while.
I know every manufacturer under the sun for every activity has been affected by the pandemic and supply chain issues and labor force issues. Where is Taylor roughly at right now? Are you running at close to full steam and churning out all these guitars that everyone's been ordering through the COVID?
The answer is yes, with a question mark.
Yes. Okay.
I was hanging out with a friend a couple of days ago, and he introduced me to a new punctuation mark, which is a combination of a question mark plus an exclamation point.
Oh, what's that called?
An interrobang, I guess.
Okay.
That was new for me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this year feels like.
Yeah.
It's sort of a bit of everything. It's been a terror. You know, this time last year, we all thought, we're going to die. This is going to be horrible. And it was a real bummer to be forcibly shut down. And so we went, okay, well, if this is what's the most responsible thing to do, we're going to close our doors for a short while. A few of us will remain here at the workshop to make sure that nobody's breaking in, doing that kind of thing.
Sure.
And we slowly started bringing work crews back, but it required a huge amount of effort to build like little cubicles between workstations and all the things that we could do to make sure that everyone was working in a safe way. And so at the same time, we didn't realize that everybody else in the world would want to stay home and learn to play guitar. So that's, you know, the silver lining out of this is, man, the amount of creative music that's being like erupting every day is just unparalleled. Like we have more musicians at all kinds of levels than we've ever faced. So a bunch of people want guitars. So we're operating as quickly as we can and at the highest capacity we can based on what the regulations allow us to do both here and in Tecate. So it's kind of a mixed bag of what we get to work on.
Yeah. And before we hit the record button, you were saying that, you know, obviously this week alone, the Suez Canal's been blocked by a boat. Like you were saying how it's kind of hard, wood's not moving across borders as quickly as it did pre-pandemic. Has the urban ash, the domestic wood, kind of helped save the day a little bit?
It's so funny. I mean, I like the expression that comes to mind is we're all waiting for our ship to come in.
Uh-huh.
Right? When you go to build guitars, especially in the type of quantity that we want to build guitars in, it means that you're going to be buying a lot of wood.
Yeah.
And we work very closely with people around the world to go, hey, this is your harvest for this year. We're going to take this because there are places where our purchase every year is all of the income for a certain region. So, you know, we want to keep them in business and providing for their livelihoods. And so we do that, but then you realize, oh, it's like stuck on a container ship and it can't actually arrive. It can't get here. Oh, that's going to be a problem. You know, it's like hardwood lumber, it's like the new toilet paper that you can't find at Target anymore. You know, it sort of just disappeared. Yeah. And so the urban wood thing has been a real lifesaver in the last weeks and months because some of the other materials that we count on as staples, well, they're there. They were cut, they were dried, they were shipped to us. We're ready to saw them and stack them and sticker them and further the drying and seasoning process once we can get them off that boat. But I'm tempted to like start paddling a surfboard out to some of these container ships and going, man, one stick at a time, if it has to go that way.
Mm-hmm. They're but just sitting out there waiting.
Yeah. The Urban Wood Project has been a real lifesaver because this is all operating within our immediate localities.
Yeah.
So these woods are nearby. They're here. I could drive there. I can drive my truck up. We can get a flatbed truck. We'll drive a semi truck up, load material up and bring it back down to the shop. We're making some cool guitars. Yeah. So that's been a real lifesaver.
That's amazing. That's great that you have that.
Yeah.
What are some of the big trends you see in, cause you guys, the cool thing about Taylor besides making great guitars is, you know, you guys are so tech savvy and you are dealing with such a volume of guitars that you probably are noticing buying trends 6 months before anybody else ever reports on them or ever notices them. What are you noticing and where do you see stuff going in the world of guitars over the next year or two?
When you see trends and say the habits of people buying things, that's always going to be in the rear view. You know, it's always behind you. It's what already happened because you can't report on something that hasn't happened yet. Right. So all those statistics, they're already outdated.
Yeah.
What we like to pay attention to are musicians and the music they're making, because that is ahead of almost everything we would work on.
Yeah.
So you listen to what people are playing, the kinds of sounds they're trying to make, the way that they want to mix sounds, influences that are kind of being melded. And that's going to determine what kinds of things we see next in guitars or what we'll want to respond with. Now, so I like to think of it as a two-way street between a maker and a musician. You know, makers will make some sort of instrument. Musicians start using this thing. And if it was a good instrument, they'll probably do some new things that the maker wasn't even anticipating. Maker watches this and then responds by creating something that's even more than what the musician could ask for.
Sure.
That's gone on for centuries.
Sure.
Between musicians and makers. It's this two-way street. I mean, a more recent example, look at Leo Fender. Okay, well, he was listening to, you know, Eldon Chamblin play with the Texas Playboys. And so he was building a Stratocaster, thinking of that kind of music and the way that people might want to use it. And you saw Buddy Holly start playing a Strat. And you go, oh, that's a little different flavor. But then fast forward 10 years and you have Jimi Hendrix playing his music on a Strat. You go, that certainly wasn't what that maker had in mind, but I'm so glad he made what he did.
Sure.
Because it's amazing.
Sure.
Right? So it's always this one step ahead kind of relationship where musicians and instrument makers are sort of egging each other on to make something better and better.
Do you have a handful of musicians who may or may not even be Taylor artists that you are leaning on for advice and consultation and feedback?
Yeah, mostly I do it through listening. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of players that I love listening to just to see what they might do next. You know, some of them are taking instruments into a very different direction. You know, not sure how I would design an instrument to fit that, but I'm listening. And others that are very traditionally minded, very not predictable, but they're very on point with a certain stylistic influence or something. And so I like to listen to a lot of musicians and a lot of music, see what they're doing, you know? So yeah, some of them are Taylor artists. Some of them are not folks I know at all. Yeah. Some of them are folks who they're not, let's say, loyal to any one model of instrument or any one brand. They're just musicians making music.
Who are some of the artists that you don't know that you've been just obsessing over?
I really love Julian Lodge's playing. Mm-hmm. So good, right? Like every note, just so good. Yeah. I don't know that. Well, we met once. We met once, but he probably wouldn't remember me from Adam. Anyway, but I love his playing.
Yeah.
Right? He makes great, great songs. I love, of course, listening to Bill Frisell, but you know that I'm a big Frizzy fan.
Yeah.
Some of those guys like that. I've been listening a lot to Billie Eilish. I really like her music. She's making some really interesting things. In fact, our brother Phineas has been playing one of these GTs a lot lately.
Cool.
I don't really know them, but they're great musicians, good songwriters, really mixing interesting sounds together. And then you have artists like Zac Brown. I mean, the guy has one of the most amazing bands you could ever think of. Every musician in that group is amazingly strong. So good on so many different instruments. And you have Zach's songwriting ability and singing, guitar playing ability. He's kind of a force to be reckoned with. And so I'll listen to the way that he's going to take his music, the directions and the influences that he's putting in. You take all those things into account to see what people will do next.
Yeah. When I think of you, and I've known you before your Taylor days, you know, you're a bit of a purist, you know, in a traditionalist in a lot of the things you do.
Yep.
You drive an old truck. You've built amazing classic archtop guitars. Do you get excited about like this pedal renaissance and like thinking like what would be the best guitar for a pedal platform or the electronic side of things?
Totally.
Or are you just like, give me the box, let me make the greatest box ever, and I'm going to hand off all that pickup-y, weird Fender Acoustasonic stuff to the next guy?
I like it all. I mean, that's the thing with guitars. It's like, if you're going to love guitars, you sort of have to love all the guitars.
Yeah.
You have to love the bad ones. You got to love the great ones, the good ones, the weird ones. You have to love all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think most people realize I actually started with an electric guitar. Like my first electric was an inexpensive Strat, but I was an electric guitar guy because I was super into the Ventures. Like,
sure. You're
I mean,
a surfer.
Like fan club level status. Like I actually rode away before in pre-internet days, to like, I want to join the Ventures fan club. You know, because these guys, I just love their music.
What did you actually get as a member of the fan club before you continue?
A bill for $7, actually.
There were all those old fan clubs.
I think I got a sticker.
Yeah.
I think I got a sticker and a membership card or something, you know.
But it, for the band.
Yeah.
Bring back the fan clubs.
Yeah. But I like it all. So yeah, I think of the pedal stuff and the different kind of circuitry that people put together. I am really into pickups and the way that they work. Obsessed kind of with magnetic induction, especially paramagnetic influence of different materials that are not ferromagnetic. That's okay. A really interesting field for me. So there's all kinds of stuff that's super fun to play with.
Explain that a little better for us idiots out here.
Okay, so there's the idea is most materials do have some sort of magnetic response. Mm-hmm. We think of ferromagnetism or iron-based magnetism as the most common one where you can polarize something. It is, you know, we think it's the common thing to think of. It's magnetically responsive. And you take a magnet, you stick it next to your refrigerator, steel door will hold it in place, that kind of thing. But if you have something like aluminum, aluminum is really interesting because we don't think of it as being magnetic, but it has a very strong magnetic response when it's in the presence of a magnetic field. You can induce all kinds of interesting currents. You can induce an eddy current. There's all sorts of interesting effects when it's in the presence of a strong magnetic field. It becomes polarized. In fact, it's the effect that most roller coasters, they'll have a braking system based on paramagnetism, where if there was a power outage, you still want the roller coaster to stop at the end of its track.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they'll play on this effect where if you have a moving magnetic field, you can create a opposite polarity electric current that will oppose this field.
Okay.
By moving a magnetic field past a conductor. So things like beryllium, copper, aluminum is the one that most easily comes to mind. There's all kinds of interesting effects to it. So there's a lot of fun stuff to play with.
Is that being utilized in the world of guitars right now?
Not yet.
Okay.
Someday. I'm
just going to leave it there.
Yep. I got some thinking to do.
All right. We were just talking about eddy currents on the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast. I said that'd be a good stage name. And then like three questions later, somebody's like, you should check out this band from Australia, Eddy Currents and the Suppression Ring. I'm like, oh, it's already a band name. Who knew?
That's great. Actually, a friend of mine up in Michigan is building a new amp. He's building an amp for me that's, I'm not really sure what it is he's coming up with. I think it's like a single single 6L6 in the power stage, so open-ended, but he's making something. He goes, it's going to blow your mind.
Nice. Okay,
sure.
Who is that?
I'm willing. A guy named Mark Masson.
Okay.
Yeah, you probably don't know him, but you probably should because he's just such an interesting person in so many different fields.
Yeah.
Really, really great thinker.
Nice. And at Taylor, are you still dividing your time up between the home workshop and the factory?
Yeah, mostly I'll try to schedule at least one day of work a week working out of the home shop.
Okay.
But it usually ends up a week here and a week there at night.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's lots of things to do, lots of things to work on. So the days get real long.
And is most or all of your time spent on forward-thinking projects, or are you walking around the line seeing what the current day production guitars are looking like, giving feedback, tweaking things?
It's a mix of everything.
It is.
Because obviously I love working on new things. It's exciting. It's like a musician going into a studio to make a new record where you go, all right, let's see, let's make some magic, you know?
Yeah.
And then a musician would go out and play a show and play a set list of songs that people know and love. Well, you want to do that well too. And so we tend to divide our time based on things that we're excited to be working on, new projects, projects that are for 10 years from now, projects that are for 5 years from now or next year, and then working on things that you've already done and seeing, can we make this a little better? Is it possible to make this more consistent? Is it possible to make an improvement that gives us a slightly more efficient result or a slightly more accurate result, all kinds of things every day.
Yeah. You still have 20 plus letters of the alphabet. Are there more bracing patterns in you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't really even know where the tradition of using letters to describe a bracing architecture. I don't know where that really came from. I guess it was just sort of obvious and easy.
Yeah.
You know, but the reality is there's a nearly infinite number of ways that you could strengthen a guitar based on the way it needs to work. I mean, you could put sticks in just about any spot and have some result. They'll not always be good results, but you'll have something. You know, you need some strength. You need to be able to control the surfaces into the type of motion that would make a pleasing musical sound. So yeah, there's any number of different ways that could be done.
You are, like I said earlier, a bit of a traditionalist. I've seen the Japanese chisels on your workbench and all that stuff, but at Taylor or elsewhere, is there like modeling software that gives you a ballpark of like, if I move this brace a millimeter this way, this is what's going to happen to the bass? Or is it all still, yeah, I got to glue it, I got to put the guitar together, I got to strum it?
I like to go with the more traditional route. I mean, I've seen a lot of people try to make modeling softwares. A lot of people have become pretty successful at doing different versions of that. Mm-hmm. And it feels similar to the difference between a chef and a food scientist. It's not chemistry, it's cooking. And yeah, there's chemistry involved, but they don't necessarily equate.
If that makes sense.
A lot of times you'll see a formula that a computer might try and model something out, and you realize, yeah, the formula is just not robust enough, or it doesn't take into the account the unique variability of this material or this, or the influence of this set of strings, or the, you know, any number of the different factors.
Got it.
For me, it still makes more sense to take my chisels down, take a piece of wood and cut away things that don't look like a guitar.
Yeah, totally. Okay. What else are you working on? Every time I see you, you're either working on your truck or something else. We talked tractors the last time we hung out. I did not buy a Kubota. I forget the model name yet, but one day.
The B6200, man. It's the B6200. Get the late 80s version. The thing's built like
you're going to drive the price up. Shh, just keep it on the down low.
They're not that expensive. The problem is most of them get pretty well abused. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's designed for dirty jobs.
Yeah.
But those little guys, for a small do-it-yourself tractor, it's beautiful. They are amazing. This last weekend, yesterday, I was finishing up. I'd wanted to take the 56, the old F100 truck, and I wanted to turn that into one with an automatic. I know the purists will hate it, but...
What? Yeah.
Yeah. The original transmission was just... It was awful. It was awful to drive. Non-synchro mesh. You had to double clutch. It was just funky. So I adapted a C4 automatic to put behind that. Got that up and running yesterday.
Are you doing that all yourself?
Well, I had the kids helping, which made it, you know, twice as long.
Always impressive, Andy.
They were a very big help.
I bet.
Yeah.
Well, as always, thank you. This was great. Did I read you're going to be at Summer NAMM's happening and you guys are going to be there?
If it's happening, I want to be there. I miss all of my Nashville friends. I haven't been there in a long time by now. It's been probably a year and a half. We're coming up on a year and a half. And, you know, I miss seeing my musician friends back there.
Yeah, well, undoubtedly I'll need to call you after that because you'll unveil something else that's cool that I don't even know about. So.
We're working on things.
Thanks, Andy.
Hey, good to see you.